Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous-led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
One second, just before we get to our 106th episode, I would just like to thank Kristen from Amazon for inviting us to present to the Amazon employees. What you are about to hear is a special episode of the Ivy Podcast. It is actually a presentation that we gave to Amazon employees. Now, it was a visual presentation. However, this is just the audio from that. So we will be referencing pictures and other things that you actually can't see. But if you are a longtime listener, you might have an idea of what we're talking about. And I just want to put that disclaimer in before anybody gets confused. Thank you again to Kristen for helping us indigenize Amazon for Native American Heritage Month. Let's get to the episode.
All right. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us today. My name is Kristen Upham. I am Blackfeet and Cree from the Montana area. We are Amazon today, and we're going to be presenting the Indigenous Vision podcast. And I want to introduce our two hosts that are going to be taking us through today.
Hi, I'm Melissa Spence. I am the co-host of the Indigenous Vision podcast, along with the producer. I am originally from Canada in what is known now as Treaty 1, Winnipeg, Manitoba. I am full-blooded Ojibwe Anishinaabe. I was raised in the city of Winnipeg for several years, and then I moved over to the U.S. in 2015 to pursue my radio career further, and that's actually when I linked up with Suta Calling Glass down in the Southwest, where I became a part of Indigenous Vision, a nonprofit that she was beginning way back then, and I began to kind of contribute my media skills towards the nonprofit. And over the years, it's evolved into this wonderful dynamic that we've created in trying to further not just our communities, but ourselves into a better way of being and a better way of living. So these days I take care of the podcast. I take care of Ivy Music. I do a little bit of website updating, pretty much all creative media that is involved with Indigenous Vision. So I'm really happy to be here. We are, I think, at 106 episodes for our podcast. So that's a really huge milestone for us. And I'm here to share all of the good things that we do at Indigenous Vision. So now I'm going to hand it over to the executive director, Suta Calling Glass.
Good morning, Kristen, Melissa. So good to be here with you today. I am coming to you from Missoula, Montana, which is the southwestern edge of Blackfoot, Salish, Kootenai, and Nez Perce territory. I'm just so thrilled. I feel like we finally kind of made it. Like every new client who comes towards us for culture humility or just to hear about ethics and environmental things, I just get really excited. And I feel like it's brand new every time because I'm that chronic volunteer community member where I've been asked to volunteer for free and speak for free for decades. So I really appreciate the opportunity, Kristen, and Amazon for inviting us in to speak this Native American Heritage Month. And I think it's perfect. I'm a little biased because our programs, I designed them to directly hit each one of those disproportionate stats that we always read about for Native American communities and First Nation communities. And so that's water, land, culture, women, and just overall community health. And again, I'm biased in that my upbringing was really privileged in terms of Blackfoot lifestyle. And so I just had the privilege of having access to my grandparents and ceremonial leaders and spiritual people. And they provided me a lot of guidance and reinforcement of identity and place. And I just have felt really lucky my whole entire life with that upbringing. And I want to share it. And so we originally started Indigenous Vision with a mapping project to map out elder stories. And I started with the ones that I was transferred as a child from my grandparents and stepdad and community members and dad. And It originally started out as a map that I wanted to put an elder in a pocket, like a share my grandpa and just have everybody feel what it's like to be on that 1,000th road trip with your person and hear the same story for the 1,000th time. And you never recognize the value of it until it's gone. And so I'm really worried about Indigenous knowledge, data, lifestyle, culture, and just the numbers of Native people that exist still. I know it seems like there's a lot of us, and with social media, we're more abundant and out there, and we're starting to assert ourselves in each one of our fields. And I just feel like it could be much more, I'm losing myself here, but I'll give it back to you so we can continue. But I think it's going to be, if we're able to share our knowledge as Indigenous people and our experiences through our stories, I think that would help break down the worldviews and the misunderstandings that happen between worldviews when they clash. And it happens every day. So at corporations like Amazon. And so I really love that Amazon invited us on to speak about the organization, the podcast, Culture Humility, anything that we could possibly bring to share our Indigenous visions worldview. Excuse me, I put an S on that vision, and I usually never like the S on there because it reminds me of non-Native people saying vision questing type stuff, or how's your visions, like your vision questing. And so, but vision in Indigenous vision is more of like the worldview and the paradigm that we operate in the world with. And so for us, we do a lot of environmental conservation and boots on the ground projects, and then podcasting and talking about it. And so it's just a frame of mind, a vision. But thank you, Kristen.
No, thank you so much. Thank you for introducing yourselves and letting us know a little about what you guys do. I discovered you guys earlier this year. I don't know what I ended up like Googling or what, but I was just like, I need something. I need some strong women in my life. I need to hear like Native women talking about these things, because right now, like I'm one of 276 Indigenous people that work at Amazon Corporate. We have been developing a like culture here through our employee resource group over the past 5 years now. This one guy, he's Ojibwe. His name's Caleb Dunlop, and he actually was our president and our founder. He started this back in 2018, and then it grew from 200 people for our very first Native American Heritage Day, and it's grown to over 3,000 people. There's about 10,000 Native employees at Amazon. A lot of the people that are within the group, though, are allies, but we don't have a lot of representation here at the corporate level. And so with myself, I drive the Indigenous seller recruitment effort here at Amazon. It's something that I've built up this past year. I've been at Amazon for 11 years. And so I'm just trying to like indigenize more of Amazon, have people hear more about us and know that we're still here. So I found you guys, and I've listened to you guys almost every single day. I've almost gone through all of your guys' podcasts at this point, because I go on like a daily walk for about an hour, hour and a half. So sometimes I get two in a day, and it's amazing. I love what you ladies are doing. You guys are amazing. I want to give you guys just the platform here at Amazon to share what you guys are doing. Tell us about Indigenous Vision, all of the programs and things that you guys do, and talk through all of that. And I just would love to hear about that. So want to turn it back over to you ladies.
Wow. I can't, like, I'm trying to rack my brain right now thinking of a larger employer in Indian country. Is there?
I'm like flattered, first of all.
That's, right. I know. I'm crying a little bit. And they're like, yeah, I am flattered. Thank you.
But it's really great to hear that you've done what you're doing over there, Kristen. Thank you for that.
Yes. It's amazing to have an organization that large that has that many Indigenous employees. I'm so proud of Amazon, because you hear a lot of bad stuff about Amazon sometimes, especially with capitalistic consumer cultures, right? And the damage it causes. But those are systems, and one individual is not responsible for entire system change, right? It's going to take all of us. And it's a slow moving beast, culture change and organizational change. And so Dunlap, the original Native American, oh, just Like, I don't know. I'm not fast enough on the reaction buttons, but I wanted to heart everything Kristen was saying. Like, yes, I love that. Because we just don't get very many opportunities as Native people to get good wages or have a good, consistent job and then have opportunities to climb the ladder, so to speak, you know? So it's really good to see that representation and then see people growing that. And it's not like it's not performatory.
Yeah. So
we wanted to talk about just a little bit of our programs and then how they relate and how we podcast. So we podcast about every single, well, first we podcast from our own individual perspectives as a city Indian and a raised Indian, and then just navigating our way through this life in both of those different avenues, and our feelings and our perspectives sometimes are very drastic from each other because of the framework that we're born into and raised up with. So really interesting when you have a buddy in culture humility so that you can reflect on our upbringing and our experiences. And so specifically Ivy programs, we have the Ivy Mapping, Ivy Media, and our Culture Humility Fee for Service. And then we're hoping that our Food Forest, it becomes a fee for service as well as a cultural retreat center that's open to, well, free for Indigenous youth and Native artists, but something as a fee for service for people looking for cultural educational experiences. So there'll be a nice walking trail there with some language of the Lenape, Delaware, and Haudenosaunee people that were in the area. This is in Southern New York. And Culture Humility, we have lots of podcasts about that. Right now, we're asking what culture humility means to people. So if you're an Amazon employee and you've had a background in culture humility before, or it's a brand new concept to you, our next podcast is going to be on defining culture humility. So if you have, Kristen, I'd love to hear, especially because you've listened to our episodes and they've been really high and energetic and then really low and very disturbed because of the world that we live in and the things that we have to encounter as Native women. And so I would love to hear your perspective of what you believe and think culture humility is, because it's just, we're finding as trainers that there's like a general organizational and even community definition. But once you really think about it, culture humility begins to embody all of the good things of everybody's culture, because we all have bad things in our upbringing and our culture. And so we really want to focus on bringing out, and that's how all of our programs are, is we've focused specifically on those disproportionate rates, which are, you know, levels of poverty, levels of violence, levels of health, shortness and quality or quantity of life. And so Native American people have the lowest life expectancies in the country. We face the most violence. We still live, majority of us, under poverty. Blackfeet and the Lakota Nations, and I'm sure many others, still experience poverty levels in the 60 to 80% level. Yeah, that's why I'm like, thank you, Amazon, for wherever you provide those 10,000 jobs, that's just amazing. Like, I'm trying to picture a big building of Native people all employed by the same people. And it's Amazon, right? Thank you, Amazon, for employing those people and giving them a good Christmas and birthdays and life experience and keeping their fridge full, because those disproportionate stats are what affect us as Native people and determine our quality of life. So the amount of stress we're under, the ability to meet those basic needs, it all determines like if we have asthma or eczema, really basic things. And so the other programs are the Ivy Mapping, which was the founding programs, and that currently I usually use public source data, which is abandoned mines, oil and gas wells, just activities, industrial activities, wastewater outlets and stuff like that. I had a little bit of missing data, and because I'm a researcher, a hydrologist, I have the ability to pull together the people to get these projects going. So if we're missing data, like for instance, I didn't have any data and I couldn't find any studies in the northern Montana area that looked into how much contamination that mink and otters were taking up into their bodies. And so I had to do it. And I got together with Working Dogs for Conservation, and they have dogs that are trained on detecting mink and otter scat. And then we take that scat to the labs to find heavy metals. And we're going to be adding pharmaceuticals soon. And then next steps of that project are starting to look at how chronic wasting disease prions move up into medicinal plants and how that might affect our harvesters in culturally significant area for culturally significant keystone species. We also map missing murdered Indigenous women for communities and nations who need specific maps of their women. Not a lot of nations have their own individual maps of where their women are going missing. And we did one for a Washington nation. And what I found is that out of their 30, I believe it was like 32 or 34 Native missing women from that area in Washington, 9 of them had gone missing in a 1-block area.
Oh.
Yeah. And so there are some amazing things that happen when you visualize the data and plot it out, and you can really get, it's just the informed decision-making that you can make off those visuals is just really impactful. So now I hope that those partners had shared that map with their police and their city officials to show that this 1 block is the most dangerous block for Native women to walk on in our town. What are we going to do about it? Same thing with our environment. There's got to be something, I know as a hydrologist, in the water or on the land that's making animals just a little bit less resilient than they would be if they had access to the biodiversity that the plains used to offer before settlement. The mapping program has a lot of community work, a lot of mixing of Western science to traditional ecological knowledge. And Melissa is just, I'm kind of the boots on the ground, and Melissa is the one that helps package everything up and get it out, because I am really, really horrible at talking about the projects because I'm so busy doing them. And then I'm like, oh no, I need more money for my project. And how am I like, yeah. So I really appreciate Melissa and all the magic she's brought to the organization. I kind of covered everything in that one. And I don't know if the employees will get to see this slide deck or if they'll just get an audio file. My presentation that I'm showing kind of shows like where our survey areas are, where CWD is moving, some of my work partners and my intern from Working Dogs for Conservation. This is one of my favorite pictures. But what it is one of our sample sites in the Sweetgrass Hills, which is an area that's significant to all of the tribes in Montana. What the orange is acid mine drainage, and it's when mine tailings or mining material has been exposed to water and air, and it oxidizes and turns this really rusty color. And in this picture, we see raccoon, otter, mink, and beaver prints. And they're walking alongside and into the mining waste. Mm-hmm. And so this is a very important picture to me to show. It's our responsibility as people and land stewards to make sure that the animals that are inhabiting our lands are there and healthy so that we can continue to live our lifestyles, because one small break in that ecosystem has ripple effects all throughout. And I did notice that I did have equipment with me on this day, and the dissolved oxygen and the acidity level of this water is just on the brink of comfortable for aquatic life. Dogs have always been a part of Blackfoot woman work. And so one of the first dogs for our partners at Working Dogs for Conservation was a Blackfeet shelter dog. And this dog, I love defying the odd stories, because this dog was in the shelter on the euthanization list because he was aggressive. You see his eyes are a little pale there. He was going blind. He was just a kind of spooky dog to be around. You don't want to spook a dog that's going blind, right? It's going to be aggressive. So they didn't know what to do with him. He was about to die. And Working Dogs took him, trained him, and he went to Zimbabwe to work on a game range and ended up confiscating thousands of guns and ammunitions and stopping all kinds of rhino horn and elephant traders from hurting the animals. And so I think that's really our duty as people. I think Western science sees the world as resource oriented. Blackfoot mentality and Indigenous mentality in general tend to see these as beings in their own homes with their own place and purpose. And so when we interrupt that purpose, then we see those ripple effects into the ecosystem that start to impact us in terms of like, is there any clean water or is there any grass or is the grass growing abundantly enough for my horses and cows? So every single lifestyle is impacted when our environment is. And so here I've got a map of, these are abandoned mines in different styles and all of their different uncapped, capped, leaking, just abandoned glory. Those are fracking mines. Those are oil and gas mines. And the darker the red is where CWD is being found. And so we start to look at how data lays over each other and what kind of story that can tell us. And then what could be done about it? And so is it going to be really easy to clean up every single one of those dots because there's less than 20 miles between each one of these dots? And so then we have to really critically think as environmental managers and people trying to make livings in these areas of what more could possibly be the culprit of why CWD is stronger in these points of development. And as a hydrologist, I think it's from an odorant that's used in the system. There's a choice of three different odorants, and odorants are used in oil and gas lines to detect leaks. And we have a bunch of line workers who are checking every day to make sure these systems are functioning right. So they check pressure gauges, they walk lines, they drive along lines, and then the odorant is in the system to detect a leak because it smells like eggs. And that one odorant is a very well-known water contaminant. And so are we likely to get more sick if we're drinking water with contaminants in it? For humans, yes. For animals, I don't know if people have made the correlation, but the study that I'm doing is mostly driven by TEK and giving the aquatic animals, we call them sweet beaks or water people, the almost like the statehood and rights of a being in their own inherent rights without us saying what those are or putting them in our own value system. And so they all have a purpose. And that brings me back to that Blackfoot place map and how those contaminants equate into where we find our historic sites and our cultural use sites. And right here, we're standing in a valley in the Shodo and Augusta area. And along this creek, I've only scanned the north bank of the creek and found nearly 700 lodges all along the area with less than a mile or two between each one. And so you think about where contaminants are being found, where activity is being put, and then where we historically put our camps is where resources in our Indigenous frame mind would be found. And so if we're experiencing climate change or if we're experiencing a drought, we can go, you know, theoretically find teepee rings that are next to a spring. Whether that spring is running or not is a different story because that's a bunch of activity around that. So it's identity building. So the Blackfoot map is the prototype map, and I want that to be for every community in the US and Canada. I want there to be a me or multiples of me for every single nation, because what it does is it makes sure that our identity extends past that reservation line. And so here sitting in Missoula, even though I'm 120 so miles away from the reservation line, I'm still sitting on Blackfoot territory because I know my history. And so there's no way that anybody could make me feel out of place or shake my identity and making me feel like I need to go home or that I need to be in Blackfoot territory, because I am. And I think that's a really cool feeling. And I want every Native, no matter where they are, to feel like they belong on this continent, because over in Seattle, Kristen, you're just the Blackfoot person who went to the ocean to travel and see things. And for the American general public to know that Natives have done this for millennia. We have always had travelers and we have always had people marrying in and marrying out and moving around. And it's just a really beautiful piece of our life that is not talked about very often.
I'm going to give her a little bit of a break, talk about some of our MMIW work. So these photos right here are actually taken from a couple of classes that we've been doing here in Las Vegas, if I didn't mention earlier. Yes, I'm from Canada, Winnipeg, but I have relocated to the desert, specifically here in Las Vegas, which is Southern Paiute territory. So I've been here for a couple years, and the MMIW work that I had started with Suta in Phoenix, Arizona, kind of expanded into this territory now because as someone who advocates and who has been showing up for MMIW families and survivors since I became involved in the early 2000s with my radio career, I found it very important to continue the work here and just continue being a part of the community. MMIW stands for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. This also extends to girls, two-spirited, trans, and of course, people in general, because there are a lot of missing men from our communities as well on the land. But specifically, we are trying to come at this crisis or epidemic of missing women from a preventative stance. So we have decided to provide free self-defense classes for young women in our community. So this is an example of how we are getting together on Wednesdays here in Las Vegas with a couple of volunteers who are instructors and inviting them to come down and learn the basics of self-defense so that whenever they do encounter violence or if they want to learn situational awareness, we do have a spot for them to come and a safe space for them to learn about all of these things. And the saddest part is everybody that comes to our classes has already experienced some sort of creepy guy following them or domestic violence already at their young age. And it breaks my heart every single time. There's a report from the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Girls report. It's actually from the Urban Indian Institute that says that it's like 1 in 4 women will experience violence. I happen to believe it is way more than that. In fact, I think it is almost every woman, from just experiencing it myself and being in the community and hearing from other women. So what we do is we put together self-defense classes, or we can sponsor. If you don't have a community like we do here in Las Vegas, I have actually teamed up with a couple of other grassroots organizations who are on board and want to advocate as well and take matters into their own hands and empower some of the young women here in the community. We can sponsor your self-defense class. You can pick a gym in your city. You can work with a trainer or instructor and get a 6-week training program on Indigenous Vision, where you'll learn the muscle memory of how to defend yourself in any kind of violent situation. And then earlier this year, we were lucky enough to put together a whole bunch of self-defense kits that we handed out at a couple of our MMIW events. We had over 250 go out across the states of Arizona, Nevada, Washington, and Montana, and I believe somewhere else even. I think I sent one to Colorado. So we handed these out, and all the women were extremely grateful to just not only receive a kit, but to know that there's people out there who are looking out for them and who are caring for them and making the time to put together these kits and then go and hand them out in their community. So if you don't know, the official day of awareness for missing and murdered Indigenous women is always May 5th. And we do have another event coming up this year, like we will pretty much every year. So our goal is, again, to keep self-defense classes free and to hand out even more kits this year, because the work never stops. And I'm really proud to be a part of it. We talk about on the podcast, we usually have community members come in just before the 5th of May to kind of share what's going on in their community so that people who might not have heard of what MMIW is can come down and learn about it and spread awareness and just get educated on the crisis that's ongoing.
And Amazon has already been a partner in this. I think we ordered all 250, 300 yeah. self-defense kits, and my fingers hurt so bad from putting those little keychains together.
Like, yeah, thank you, Amazon.
Yes, thank you for that. Because it did make the ordering easy, and we did have kits go specifically to Phoenix and Las Vegas and me here in Missoula. And then we just spread them more across the country from our individual locations. And so these kits have a Kubaton, which is like a fist reinforcer. I have really weak hands and I throw pretty silly punches. Like my self-defense, I lean strongly on the strength from my legs. It's just, I really don't like people within arm's reach of me. And so
they'll break a window too. A Cubaton will break a window.
Yeah. And so it's really good to have in case this sounds really crazy. I don't know why things come in my brain, but if your car falls off the road and into into the water, you're going to need to break your window. It has a personal alarm, which is really good for me and my hiking, because I have, you know, I can't yell that loud. And so personal alarms help me be a little louder. It's got a pepper spray, and then just fun stuff like chapstick and hand sanitizer. Each one is a little different. Some of them came with pocket knives, and we tried to make sure those ones went to just the adult women, because there was a lot of teenage girls that are really concerned about their safety and the younger women in college. And I was really like, at this event here in Missoula, Montana, we had a booth where we were giving out the self-defense kits. And I had so many dads come up and ask for one for their mom, one for their wife, one for their daughter. And it just really made me feel good that, because the like one of my biggest gripes, if you've ever listened to me, is like, where are the men at? Like, where are the men protecting our community? Where are the men protecting our women? In the old days, we used to have warrior societies, and they would kind of patrol and do surveillance. And so I wonder where the men are sometimes. And so this event was really nice to get that assumption of mine, like, shattered, in that there were a lot of men who were really concerned about their daughters. And I just think that's cute. I love it. We need more men like that.
Definitely. Ooh, I love cultural humility.
Yes. I feel like cultural humility is different for women of color. We've been doing the training of trainers, and you get a certificate at the end, and all of the materials you'll need to go on to be a successful consultant. I feel like over, how long has it been, Melissa? 6 years of training?
Well, yeah, I remember when I started babysitting for you while you were doing the in-person trainings before the pandemic. It was like 2018. So we're looking at going on 7 years now.
Okay. And Black and Brown women have just had an extraordinary reaction to cultural humility. And I don't know if anybody has written about it. I don't know if Dr. Murray Garcia and Melanie Turvalon have experienced this either, but women of color experience liberation and support and love and freedom. Like, there's really crazy feelings of freedom to be released from, like, unconscious holds that are, they're more like mental blocks that society has put on us as women, that we just say, oh, wait, let me take my power back. You don't have that control over me and how I move and navigate through the workplace or my community. It's just really amazing to have women in the training who are emotional about the freedom to introduce themselves in their native language and have it be respected and have that be a learning moment for their colleagues to really get to know who they are, where they come from, what they're about. And I just, you know, my mind always goes back to that one story of the two employees, the manager and the employee, who worked together for 13 years and exchanged Mexican cookies every year. And it was all based on the assumption of the employee's last name, which was along the lines of Estevan or Rodriguez, but it was like a South American type Spanish Latin name. And they had exchanged Mexican cookies for 13 years. Neither of them are Mexican. And they found out in the training on the assumptions activity that the assumption had been made because of the last name. And nobody ever questioned the Mexican cookies every year. And so the employee assumed that the boss was Mexican, and the boss was assuming that the employee was Mexican, and just wanted to be inclusive. But it was funny that's my most memorable assumption. And it's the silliest because it's light, but it's really heavy. Can you imagine possibly some of the other assumptions that come along when you assume, like, that Kristen is Mexican and not Blackfeet? So
yeah. I get it all the time.
Yeah. People always assume that I am anything but the things that I actually am. Like, no one will think that I'm Japanese. I'm a quarter Japanese. I'm a quarter Blackfeet, and I'm half white. And I'm a giant because I'm Blackfeet. And people always think I'm Middle Eastern or Mexican or any brownish person that they might have grown up with. So traveling in Europe for me is actually pretty easy. It's funny because a couple months ago I was at a, and this is assumptions that I've based up, like I've made myself, is I went to a gaming convention, and one of the guys who I'd met the previous year who makes board games, I played his board game that he was testing out, met him. His name was John Bratt, Go Minty Beans Labs, little shout out there. And I don't know, I guess I assumed that Benjamin Bratt, the actor, was Mexican. Apparently he's not. And that this guy, turns out he's Muskogee. And so when we saw each other this year at our conference, I was like, hey, like he and I had been like, we were at the same table doing a competition. And then I told him like what I do, work with indigenous sellers. And he was like, he's like, I'm Muskogee. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah. And then the other guy on the other side of me, he's like, yeah, I'm Yakima. And I'm like my body, I was just like, oh my God. I was like, there's only six people at this table for this competition and half of them are native. And I was like, mind blown, super happy. And I was like, never, never have assumptions on somebody. Just ask them about themselves.
Yeah, that's exactly what this training does. We all get into a group. We go through the framework, which was developed by some fabulous doctors in the Oakland area back in the 90s. And it's evolved into this wonderful space of people learning from each other in like a peaceful and graceful way. And it's just something that I learned in 2019 with my first training was, wow, I can really get to know people on a different level by just being more curious and respectful about it instead of just making assumptions in my head and just running off of the autopilot scripts that we absorb from our society. So this training really breaks it all down over like 4 days, 10 hours. We go through it all with each other, and I highly recommend Culture Humility for any workplace training, every workplace training, I should say. Everybody should go through Cultural Humility at least once.
Absolutely. And well, they should teach it in high school, but it does have, so it's designed as a train the trainer, because, you know, someday I'm going to be a millionaire, but it's not going to be off of Culture Humility and Indigenous Vision. But we designed, and I think Melanie, Dr. Turvalon and Dr. Jean-Marie Garcia designed Culture Humility with that in mind, is that it's not possible for any one of us to solely lead Culture Humility. It's not Culture Humility, actually. And so Culture Humility is respecting the inherent knowledge and expertise and skills and believing that person of what they say is true. So you also believe it, right? They are the expert of their own experience. It just helps people and organizations continue the effort, because it's a pretty well-known fact. Well, no, it's not. I'm just kidding. My master's is in management, and a long master's in management people, it's a pretty well-known fact that 80% of change initiatives fail. So it doesn't matter how awesome of an organization or company you work at, if you're trying to, and you should be trying to implement change initiatives every day, because we don't, you know, that's preventative management and not crisis management. So depending on your leadership's goals, it's really good to have your people trained as trainers. Then you're not hiring consultants and hiring out, but you have employees develop into the leaders of this, and then they continue the dialogues, and then you create a culture of dialogue, because it's really uncomfortable to talk about uncomfortable things if you have no training or experience in it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite programs that we have at Indigenous Vision.
Right. And really quick, because I'm the trainer and I have to, those principles are a lifelong process of critical self-reflection and self-critique, redressing the power imbalances in patient provider or client employee, or, you know, whatever level tier you're in, a dynamic, and making those mutually beneficial, specifically non-paternalistic. Like, we all love to be mothered and antied, but when it goes into the workplace and your decisions are made for you, such as like federal governments and nations, then you're domestic dependent nations and you're not actually a sovereign nation, right? And so it's really nice to have non-paternalistic relationships with people who don't belittle you and treat you as if you're not smart enough to be making your own decisions. And then how organizations continue that is they advocate and they maintain that accountability through individual accountability and continuous and ongoing culture humility dialogues so that there's no time to ruminate, there's no time to stew. If there are issues amongst your employees and leadership, it's taken care of before it has time to build into something unnecessarily large and hard to handle. And so it's culture humility. I just can't be a fangirl enough.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, the fundraiser for Native American Heritage Month. This is going to extend past the 30th, I believe. And we're just trying to raise funds. We have all the people, we've got the land, we've got the projects, we've got everything we need. We just need the budgets to keep it going and keep all of our wonderful expertise paid and compensated into the coming years. There are so many wonderful people that we work with, and we would just like to pay them what they are worth. So this is where the fundraiser comes in.
Mm-hmm. And to keep those projects going, it's $1 million fundraiser, and it's huge. I have never done something so crazy in my life, but here I am.
I loved it.
Right? It's $1,492, the magic number. Yes, $1,492,000 that we're going for, right? 1 million. Yeah, right. That's not a big number anymore. We need billion. Nobody saw that.
Yeah.
But it'll keep every single one of those projects going for 3 years at least. And so I'll make that money stretch. And if I can develop these projects to what they are with a little skimpy budget of about $100,000 a year for 6 years, and then before that out of my pocket, I can do amazing things with $1 million. So thank you everybody who's donated and who's invested. And thank you, Kristen, for finding us and supporting us in the way that you do. And I just can't say enough about how happy I am that Amazon is an employer who is welcoming in these activities. Thank you, Amazon.
Yes. Thank you so much. I really hope that you guys get to your funding goals. We will also be blasting it around here. Like, what you guys do is amazing. And the fact that you guys have been doing it for so long and so successfully on such a small budget, I want to give kudos to you, because I mean, even like for myself, even just like enjoying the podcast and consuming the podcast, it's, you guys helped me at a time where I needed to feel empowered, hear empowered Native women, and to feel like bring in my own power of myself. And I would love to see one of, to have your guys' cultural humility training here in Amazon. I think that our leadership would really appreciate it. These are things that we try to do all the time. We have types of activities like this, and like they've been successful, but I think that taking it from the Indigenous lens and really listening would be, I think, a cool and amazing next step. There, I think, are so many teachings that people don't understand, that this is how Natives are, and this is what we believe to our core of how we are as people. And we're just so close to, I think, nature and ourselves and our histories that we could lend an ear to all different pathways and walks of life. One thing that I had seen, like, that I've been following also with you guys on the chronic waste and disease map that you guys do have. Something that I also forwarded to my dad. He lives out on the Blackfeet Reservation. And of course, everybody in our family hunts every season. And so I'm always like, are you guys sending off your heads to this program? I was like, there's this lady, she's Blackfoot, and she's doing all these amazing things and helping people. Like, I think you had done like some type of gift receipt or gift card for people who were turning in their heads. And so I was like telling all of my relatives to go ahead and do that, because that's something scary, and I want to make sure that they're being protected. And actually last week I had a panel similar to this where I was chatting with a lady from Greenland, and she had talked about how one of her friends who's a scientist, they actually always go to the hunters in Greenland and them look at their the research that they've been doing and the conclusions that they think they're going to be coming to, and gets their perspective, because they know that hunters and people that are much more close to the earth, like people that are, because Greenland, it's mostly, I think 80% of the country is are indigenous. They're related to our Inuit people from like our side of the country that like migrated over there. And it was an amazing thing to see them also doing something that I think that you do as well, Suta, which is taking your indigenous teachings and learnings and apply that to science.
I'm still floored and I'm still emotional because I'm a shy girl. So it's really hard for me to podcast, but Melissa makes it easy and promises she'll edit out anything.
It's a process. I've been pulling her along since 2018, slowly.
So this is video making or vlogging the projects, or at least podcasting about them, is something I've always really wanted to do. And so I'm so glad that you felt brought in. And especially when you needed it, because that was our entire goal of like, let's make women feel like they're sitting at the table with us, just talking about their day. And I think we did it. Thank you so much. Thank you.
It really makes me happy to hear that as well. There's so many ways to be Indigenous, and we are examples of how we're just so different, yet we come together all the time and we share our lives together. And it's a beautiful thing that we get to document it in all of these contemporary ways. I mean, I love podcasting. I love just talking, and it's almost therapeutic, and it's really good to connect with people out there, because I was once that person that was trying to connect with my culture. I didn't know even where to start. I didn't even know if there was anybody like me, you know, because I have such a unique background. My parents are both 60s scoop. I was raised in the city my whole life. I didn't start connecting to my culture till I was around 26. So it's really cool to hear that there's other people on their own journeys reconnecting or have been connected, like Suta has her whole life. Like, there's just so many ways to be Indigenous. And to me, that's just the most beautiful thing. So I try to just share my authentic experience as I journey through life. And Suta does the same. And we put it all together in this beautiful audio package and unleash it into the world forever. That's like probably my favorite thing, is that these are going to be here forever for anybody to check out at any time.
Yes, women are much safer and stronger together. So thank you, Kristen. Thank you, Melissa. We'll just pat ourselves on the back now. Thank you.
We're
everybody.
The best. Yeah.
We're amazing.
So amazing.
Oh, thank you, Amazon, for celebrating Indigenous Heritage Month with us. And thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the IV Podcast, or the Indigenous Vision Podcast. We are an educational nonprofit based in Montana, Arizona, Nevada, and New York, and this is our special show. If you'd like to contribute to our Native American Heritage Month, we are trying to reach a goal of a cool 1.4 milli, or should I say, $1,492,000, wink, wink. You can actually check out the show notes for this episode, or if you'd like to contribute, you can go through our website, indigenousvision.org/donate. And don't forget, we do have a cultural humility training coming up that is virtual. All are welcome, and we will begin on January 23rd. Again, all of the details will be in the show notes for this episode. Thank you for listening to the Indigenous Vision Podcast.